Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Hollywood New Horsepower, the show about the story behind the story. Today, we are joined by a very special guest, and, you know, it's a family that's always been near and dear to my heart, is Cary Earnhardt, son of Dale Earnhardt Sr. I had the privilege of crossing paths with his dad a few times, have great respect for him. Anybody that knows me knows that I've always looked up to Dale. In fact, when I raced, my car number was 003, like probably a half a million other racers that followed the 003. So, Cary, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are y'all doing?
Great. And I really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's really an honor. I appreciate you having us on.
So you've got a really interesting story, and you and I kind of share a little bit of a similar background. We're both adopted. You obviously, you know, found your dad and everything worked out great, you know, but, and I think very similar, you know, I had a great upbringing, no complaints or regrets, you know, my very close with my adopted parents, and, you know, you were the same way. But I wanted to kind of go back, if we just dive right in here. And, you know, looking over, if you look at the highlights of your life, you had kind of like the all-American childhood, if you will. You know, bicycles, fishing, playing in the woods, your buddies growing up playing baseball and football. Take us back and tell us what it was like growing up and, you know, how things went for you.
Well, you know, I was born in 1969 and...
Small town.
You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I didn't really know my dad growing up until I was about 16. Him and my mom divorced, and my stepdad adopted me when I was 3 years old. And so I really never had a life growing up with him. But I had a great family with my dad, Jack, and my mom, Latane, and
you know, and your sister?
I have a sister with them.
That's what I meant.
I mean, JJ is what I called her. And, you know, we had a great life. And, you know, we grew up fishing, playing golf, riding dirt bikes and bicycles up and down the road, and had, you know, a great childhood.
Is that where you really got the bite for the outdoors? Was it just kind of in the area? Like, everybody was into that?
With my stepdad, we only fished. He didn't hunt, so I was never around hunting, but I always had passion for hunting. And I guess it was just in my genes. And
sure.
My dad, you know, his love of the outdoors, Dale, he enjoyed the outdoors, hunting, fishing, everything, and just being on the farm, working on the farm. So I think I got that through him, but really never had the experience.
Until you're a little bit older.
Until I was older.
So you grew up, you know, normal, just like any of us, normal childhood, you know, riding bikes, playing, fishing. And then you get into your teen years and you discover, you know, that you know, Dale Earnhardt, your dad. Well, that had to be pretty surreal because you had to know who he was.
I did. I learned. I don't remember how old I was, but I was young. I learned that I had, you know, another dad, and you know, I found out who it was, and you know, I always wanted to see him, but it just wasn't ever allowed. And one day I got to be able to call him and talk to him on the phone when I was 13 years old, and I remember, you know, the little conversation we had. It wasn't a long phone call. It was a short conversation. And you know, I told him whenever I turned 16, I was going to be able to come see him and if that was okay. And, you know, he said that he would, you know, like for it to happen before, but he just, you know, just circumstances never allowed it.
Sure.
So when I turned 16, I got my license and I dropped my mom back off at the house and went to my grandmother, Martha's, because I knew Dad was always in the garage behind her house. So I went over there and you know, I skipped a little story there. I got to know my grandmother through playing baseball when I was a kid, and she would come.
I was going to touch on that. You actually met her before you met Dale.
Yeah, I always seen this woman and two girls at my ball game, and they was always watching me, or follow me around and stuff. And one day I was doing something, and she come up and spoke and said, "Carrie Dale." I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she goes, "I'm your grandmother, Martha, and this is your cousins, Jennifer and Ashlyn." And it caught me off guard, but I kind of knew then that that's where I learned about my dad.
Your dad knows a big family. And for those people just joining us, I'm joined by Carrie Earnhardt, son of Dale Earnhardt Sr., and he's talking about his meemaw's grandmother, Martha. Martha, for people that don't know, was Ralph Earnhardt's wife and Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s mother. That had to be almost surreal, and it sounds like she was just an incredible woman. You know, she took time to come and get to know you, and she wanted to see you, and a typical grandmother.
Yeah, she was a great grandmother, and and thankfully everything worked out the way it did, because I got to be with my family that I had that I didn't know about when I was growing up, and
sure,
it was great. Catching up and, being with my family, and still today we still have gatherings and stuff. My mama always made sure that happened, and then, now she's passed. My brother, Dale Jr. and Kelly, they continued it on. We always gather, some location that he has. Like, we always have a lot of gatherings at the house on Lake Norman that he owns, and, we just had one not long ago, just a summer gathering for all the family to get together, and it's not just done.
And there's still a lot of Earnhardts.
Yeah, it was the G's, Robert G, and Brenda G was Dale Jr. and Kelly's mom. And, so we have the Earnhardts, the G's, and there's another family that I'm forgetting. But we all gather every summer and get to hang out and, catch up in conversations. And, we see some of the families, but we don't get to see them all until times like that.
Yeah, and I know that Dale Jr. and Kelly have been really instrumental in that, like keep continuing those traditions, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it is kind of amazing. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize that, your dad, Dale Earnhardt Sr., had siblings as well. He had brothers, and, they all had families. So there probably are a lot of Earnhardts still around the area.
Yes, there is. Uncle Danny and Uncle Randy, and then Aunt Kay and Aunt Kathy, Kathy and Kay are still around with us, and unfortunately we've lost Uncle Randy and Uncle Danny. They've already passed away, and just still get to enjoy and
be close to everybody. And that's kind of nice too, that your kids get to experience that and get to know their family.
It is, and our grandkids, and I got three five now. My oldest boy's got four, and my youngest daughter's got one. So she's just turned a year old. So we've been enjoying life lately.
And you and your wife have four kids.
Correct. Yes. I've had two boys. She had a girl, and we had a daughter together. So that's been, say short, we've been blessed.
Yeah. Sounds like, and it was. And for people that don't know, Dale Sr. had you, Dale Jr., Kelly, and Taylor. So there was four of you as well. Are you guys all pretty close? I know that you and Dale and Kelly are pretty close. Are you guys pretty close with Taylor as well?
Not as close as I'd like to be.
Sure.
We'd like to be around her, but she's not around much. And the only time my daughter, youngest daughter, Kayla Earnhardt, she's into rodeoing and, does barrel racing, goat tying, and pole bending. And she actually got a scholarship. She was at Oklahoma, four-ride scholarship on the rodeo team. And then she had a baby, so she's come back home, and she is actually transferred to University of West Alabama on their rodeo team now. So we're really looking forward to that starting up. She's got to miss the first three rodeos due to transferring.
The transfer.
Yeah. So,
what grade is she in now?
She's a senior this year in college.
Okay.
And so where I was going with that is that's where we get to see Taylor occasionally at rodeos that my daughter goes to, and you know, Taylor might be at them, and we get to, you know, visit and catch up there, but that's the only time.
Okay.
So, you know, it's unfortunate. We'd love to be around her and be, you know, part of her kid's life too. And she's got a little girls growing up, and it hurts me, I guess, more because me and Taylor got really close whenever Dad passed, and I'd done a lot of stuff with her, and you know, we was always doing things together, and circumstances that happened, and you know, we're just not able to talk as much as we used to, and kind of grew apart.
Yeah, and you know, life's kind of like waves on the ocean; it comes and goes, so you never know.
You know,
some things come circle round.
Yes, correct. And you know, and a lot of people don't realize that even though this, you know, celebrity status my dad had, and you know, the life everybody saw that he had, didn't realize that we're average people,
family,
like everybody else. We all have, you know, scenarios in our life that goes, and we always have, you know, incidents or anything. It's just like any normal person. Everybody's
absolutely
like the world.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. You know, people, and I've said this a lot, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I mean, for people that don't know, you know, we're talking to Carrie Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s son. Dale Sr. was, you know, unique. He, just what you described, you know, everybody saw the celebrity side, and everybody saw him as, you know, the Winston Cup champion and everything, but I think a lot of people don't realize what he went through to get there.
No,
you know, I mean, he worked his tail off. And I heard him say one time, you know, he said, you know, truth be told, he says, I probably should have quit this and went and got a job, but it was the only thing I ever wanted to do. He said, there was many times I shouldn't have been racing.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a different drive, you know, and I think that's what really, I've said this to you before. He was one of those guys that seemed to be able to see things ahead, like more than most people. Like he would look at something and say, I've got to do this to get to here. And then
Correct.
He'd go do it.
Yes, exactly. And you know, he sacrificed a lot in life. You know,
he really did. And I don't think most people know that.
No, he had three marriages. And then, like I said, I didn't have a relationship with him growing up until I was 16. And, you know, that was some of the sacrifices that he took and to get to where he was at. And, you know, I could be resentful and hate things that he done and maybe hate him for what he's done. But I never look back on that. I look for the future of what could be in the future if there's an opportunity to be around the family and be part of it. And
I think you also have to look at him, and he seemed like one of those guys that, I thought there was a day that went by he wasn't thinking about his family, and that's why he was out there doing what he was doing. I heard a story one time that a friend of his told that he was driving after some race, and he actually kind of started welling up, you know, got a little teary-eyed, and his friend's like, what's the matter with you? And he said, you know what? He goes, this is going to be the first Christmas that I can buy my mom a real gift. You know what I mean? I mean, those are the sides of him that people didn't see.
Exactly.
You know, he was a guy that had a lot of emotion, a lot of heart. He definitely, family was a huge deal. You touched on it. You know, Dale's favorite place was in the outdoors or at the farm. There's no question about it. I mean, he loved to race. Don't get me wrong. Anybody that knows him knows that. But he loved being at the farm. That was truly his happy place. And you talk to people that were around, and you were around when he was building DEI and clearing the trees and everything, and everybody says the same thing. He was just, you know, that was probably one of his happiest times.
It was being on the bulldozer or on the tractor or riding on the farm was it was his time.
And you're a lot the same way. You've got that same love of the outdoors.
It is. I've been gone. My wife's probably upset with me pretty much right now. I've been gone for 4 days. I've been up in Virginia. I've got a hunt lease here in Virginia. And then my mother-in-law's place in Virginia also. So I came up and worked around my mother-in-law's place, bush hogged a lot of stuff, and, you know, done some repairs and stuff at the house. And then I drove from there and come up to my hunt lease. And I've been up here yesterday morning mowing all day, bush hogging, and I've got probably another 2 hours of bush hogging up here before I go back home. So I enjoy it.
Yeah. And your wife enjoys it. I know that you guys do the Earnhardt Outdoors together and, you know, several things.
Yes, and she loves being outdoors too. We have a lot of things back home with the animals and stuff that has to be taken care of. She'd probably be up here helping me, you know, trim limbs and, you know, work food plots and everything with me. But she's, you know, we got other things to take care of at home, and somebody's got to be there for that.
So do you have quite a bit of, do you have a farm yourself, livestock and things like that?
No, not really. I mean, we got some horses and goats. And we actually got a pig that we picked up on the side of the road, on our road, before it got run over. It's unfortunate. I mean, it's hard.
Oh, a little guy?
Yeah, he was small then, you know, but now he's like 180 pounds. He's pretty big. But he's enjoying life. He had an opportunity to get run over by a dump truck. My wife's taking my daughter to school and saw it, and she kind of, you know, stopped that from happening and got the dump truck stopped before it hit the pig.
Oh, wow.
And so we ended up chasing that thing around for about an hour and finally caught it and brought it home. So Hamlet's what we called him, and he's enjoyed life. But yeah, we have a little small acreage there at the house, and you know, it's not no big farm like people would imagine. It's just 13 acres, and we had, like I said, we got four horses now and three goats and a pig.
Okay. So going back, and I know we're jumping around a little bit, going back, you know, you met Martha, you know, she introduces you to your dad. Is that, I think a lot of people probably don't realize that, if, correct me if I'm wrong, that was the same garage that Ralph Earnhardt raced out of.
It is, it sure is. And, you know, and going back to that story, I went to my grandmother's and I parked in front of the house so they couldn't see my car from the garage. And I walked in and sat with my grandmother for a little over an hour or two. It is a while. And, you know, just building up the courage to walk out the back door to walk down to the garage and meet my dad in person for the first time. There are several times that I tried to see him, like an appearance or something he was supposed to do.
Cross paths with him, yeah.
You know, he just, there's one appearance at a car dealership there in my hometown, and I went and sat there and waited for him to show up, and he was a no-show. And so that was the opportunity I missed on. And, you know, he never came for his appearance, and got, I don't know why he wasn't there, but, you know, I always say life leads you to paths.
Takes you where you're supposed to be.
To humble you, I guess. And so, you know, the time I went to my grandmother's and sat there, and I walked out the back door, and I walked up to the garage, and you hear everybody laughing and cutting up inside, and, you know, tools clanking and stuff. And I walked in, and everybody got quiet, and Dad just looks at me and says, "Hey, son, how you been?" And, you know, that kind of took the relief off, I guess, the butterflies away. You know, so we got to talk a little bit. We went riding around in his truck and caught up just between me and him by ourselves. And so one thing led to another, and, you know, we had a great relationship after that.
Yeah. Was, do you think, or did he ever talk about, was he kind of keeping track of you through the years? Cause he seemed to be well aware of you.
Yeah, he did. He, you know, he told me there was several times he tried, you know, to be able to see me and, you know, that, you know,
show up at a game or something.
It just, you know, it just could never happen.
Sure.
And my mom and stepdad didn't want it to happen. So,
well, I'm probably trying to be protective.
I understand that, you know, and, you know, my stepdad Jack, he raised me, and, like I say, we had a great life and had a great relationship, and, he just didn't want me to be hurt, I guess. in that scenario.
And just and then, being protective.
Yeah, yeah. And then and so after I got to meet Dad and we hung out and got, you know, to know each other and, you know, being around for Christmas with him and stuff like that, we talked about me and Dell Jr. moving into a house together, living together. We were both young. I was 21 and Dell Jr. was like 16. And so we ended up moving in a trailer together. It was a double wide trailer, and talked about racing all the time. And Dell Jr. was like, "Why don't we just get a race car and start racing and see where we go?" And so we ended up going down to a junkyard down the road. A friend of mine is actually a friend of my mom's. The wife was a friend of my mom. And, you know, I knew them through my mom, and because they was always hanging out and we was always together. So I got to know Doug Wayne, which is Wayne's Automotive Junkyard, that me and Dell Jr. went to and bought a Monte Carlo from and brought it back to the shop and was, you know, going to build a race car, and Dad seen it, and he said, "What's this?" And we told him what we was going to do, and he's like, "Don't touch that car. I got to go on back and forth, I'll be back." And so he left, and I looked at Dell Jr. and said, "Man, he's not going to let us build a race car out of this thing." He said, "Well, you know, we could bust the windows out, lights out and everything, and that would probably help us." So that's what we did, and had come back. Of course, you know, we was in trouble for that. He was upset and mad because we did that. And we're like, you know, we just want a race car. We didn't want you to take it away from us because it was a nice car. It just, you know, didn't have a motor and transmission. He's like, "No," he said, "I won't be part of it." So, you know, we all jumped in there and built this race car. Me and Dell Jr. went to Concord and started racing. And it was a great time.
That was where it started. So you, Dale, I didn't know that. You and Dale Jr. actually raced the same car, and that's where you guys started.
Yes, sir. You know, I drove the first three races. We was going to alternate every other weekend, and I ended up driving the first three races until he was able to drive and be able, you know, get in the seat.
Did you have to be a certain age at that time to get in the seat?
I just think it was a little nerves.
Just getting ready, yeah.
Yeah.
Was this a track like that, like Ralph had started on, or was it where Dale had started? Okay.
Dad, Ralph, it's Concord Motor Speedway in Concord, and it's not there anymore. The Furs, Henry Fur and Yvonne Fur, owned it. And it was a neat little track. It was a pretty good size, half-mile track with a dog leg in the back stretch, and it was a lot of fun. We had good times there and learned a lot and made some people mad and made some people happy.
And that was the essence of it. And I think that's so cool that you got to grow up not only in an area where it was just like it was part of the DNA, but also where all that history was. Like, these are the tracks where Ralph raced and probably Richard Petty and some of the other big names that we knew. And it's just like, and back then, there was just guys coming out on the weekend to race.
Yes.
And like people say, that was Ralph Earnhardt before he was Ralph Earnhardt.
Right, yeah. Everybody's got to start, you know. And I mean, it's like LeBron James or, you know, any of these other basketball players, baseball players, whatever. They all started from somewhere before people knew them.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, it's funny that, you know, people don't, to your point, you know, it's a family. And interestingly enough, to your dad, I always felt that it was a family first. I always got the impression, and I've heard him say this, that the whole reason he started DEI was for you guys. He wanted to build something for his family.
Yeah, and it was, and you know, unfortunately, it's not that way now.
Yeah, but, you know, he set the one thing he did do, though, he set the DNA. You know, he taught you guys the business. He taught you guys the work ethic. You know, there's a lot he did that you can see it today. You can even see it today in like what Dale Jr. and Kelly are doing and what you're doing. And, you know, I mean, it's very, very apparent, you know.
It is. And, you know, and honestly, my wife learned a lot from him also, as far as business things. And, you know, he taught her some things. And as far as
he was business, brilliant when it came to that.
He was, and, you know, he's the one that, you know, created and built Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, and he was the reason it continued the way it did. As many could tell and see now that he's gone, Incorporated.
Ish.
But there's no race teams anymore.
No. Well, and it's interesting to me. Something that always impressed me, and I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, he was a loyal guy, too. He was very true to the people that were good to him. And he raced for Richard right till the end.
Yes, sir. And he could have had other rides. Richard even told him at one point when they wasn't doing too well, he said, man, you need to go find another team to drive for. I'm holding you back because, you know, we can't prepare great cars for you to show your skills that you have and the ability you have. And, you know, Dad's like, no. He said, we're in this together. If you're in it, I'm in it. And they stuck together, and, you know, that's how they got the 7 championships and all the races and stuff they won.
So was that something that you wanted to do, like, even from a young age? Was it always something that interested you even before you knew?
Yeah, I really wasn't in, like, thought about racing. I was into street rods. I had the 70 Chevelle, 72 Chevelle, 65 Impala, and, you know, I was always tinkering with them, and, you know, had enjoyed older cars.
Do you still have the Chevelle?
I do not.
Oh. Not too many people have that car. But
the car I wish I had was my 65 Impala. Believe it or not, that thing is a big old boat, but it was something my mom's brother, Uncle Terry Brown, he bought off showroom floor, and he passed down through the family. You know, my cousin got it in Georgia, and then after him, I got it. And, you know, it needed a little bit of work when I got it, wiring harnesses and stuff. And I, you know, 16 years old, I was wanting a vehicle, and this guy come by with this 72 Chevelle and offered a trade even. And, of course, I had to call my uncle and talk to him before I did it. But he's like, do what you feel you got to do. And I did, and he didn't talk to him for like 6 months.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But it was a running, driving car.
Yeah, something like jump 16. In and go. Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't understand, you know, what that car really meant and, you know, what the value of that car was at the time. Outside
Have you
of
ever
money.
Tried to find
family.
It? Is it still floating
I found it. I don't know if it is now, but I did find it and it had been tubbed out and put on the drag strip. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was ruined.
It was ruined.
Yeah. But So
what did you think you wanted to do when you were a kid? For people joining us, this is Kerry Earnhardt, son of Dale Earnhardt Sr. We're talking about his career and life and family. Growing up as a kid, before racing, before you even knew Dale Sr., what was it you thought you wanted to do?
Well, I wanted to be a baseball player. I loved baseball.
Okay.
Become a professional baseball player. And
what age did you start playing baseball? I know it was pretty young.
Yeah, I started playing t-ball. It was first, you know, I guess I was, I don't know how young I was, but, you know, I was playing t-ball, a little big snow white head kid.
What inspired that? Was Jack into baseball, or was there something else?
No, he was into golf.
Okay.
You know, he was big into golf, and he loved golf, and I tried to pick it up, and I just couldn't get the joy of it. We actually had a golf shop where a driving range where we built clubs, and my dad built clubs, and, you know, people come by and buy a bucket of balls and hit golf balls. And I enjoyed that.
That right there is about the joy of it. Yeah, I was thinking about writing a book, how I line up my four put and how to lose 2 boxes of balls in 1 round. But that's a frustrating sport if there ever was one. It is a funny sport, though, because it's one of those that you hit one good shot, you're back in the game.
Yeah. Right back. You know, I still play golf today, but it's nothing. It's like 2 or 3 times a year and sporting like charity events or just with friends. And I'm not one that's going to hit a bad shot and wrap the club around a tree or anything. I'm one that wants to have a good time and enjoy the game, you know.
I'm the same way. My kids, so I have 2 kids, Grace and Keith. My son is 21, soon to be 22. He's a senior in college as well. And my daughter, Grace, is 17. She's senior high school. And the 3 of us would golf. And, yeah, I'm the same way. My thing is if I can't see the ball from where I am, I'll just drop another one.
Yes, me too. If I lose one, I got to find 2 to make up for it.
Exactly. Just start walking around and, hey, yeah. we'll play this one. It's in a little better spot anyhow.
I found one, but no, that ain't mine.
So you decide you want to play baseball. You played. How far did you go with it? Did you play all the way through high school?
Tenth grade. I played baseball in high school, and then after that, I got out of it and
got interested in cars and girls.
Well, yeah, got interested in girls.
Yeah,
I had to get a job to pay for my.
Your girlfriend is a child. So that kind of brings us up to adult life. You know, at this point, you've already met Dale. You're working. You got a pretty cool car. Meet a girl. So you end up kind of becoming a father at a young age as well.
Yeah, I was 18 years old when I had my first child, Bobby. And it was 1987. He was born. And so I had a job before that. I worked at gas station pumping gas and changing oil. And
you had a reputation of being quite the pizza chef, too. You had a job there, if I'm not mistaken.
There I went to Pizza Hut and enjoyed working Pizza Hut. I loved that.
Sounds of it, your friends did, too. A lot of free pizzas.
Yeah, they did. They got a lot of free pizzas. And you know, everybody wanted me to make their pizzas because at Pizza Hut, you had a measuring cup with all the each ingredient that you had used by measurements, and I had a big hand, so that's what I used, and I put a lot of ingredients on there and made it a really nice pizza. And
I wish we were friends then, because I'm Italian. I would have been hanging out there every weekend.
Well, my manager, he gave me a hard time about it. He rode my butt about it, but he understood, and I didn't get in trouble or fired for it. So
he got requested when people would order. They want Carrie to make their pie.
They want me to make the pizzas. I started out working pizza, washing dishes, and I just started there and ended up working the drive-through window from there, and then ended up making pizzas. And the guy told me I had material to be a manager one day in Pizza Hut, and I was like, that ain't my passion. So I'm just here making money to join my hobbies on weekends.
So you meet Bobby and Jeffrey's mom. Did you meet her right there in the local town?
I went to school with her, high school.
Okay.
And her, we started talking and ended up dating, and her dad was a Church of God preacher, and I always say the preacher's daughter is always the wildest one. So
I've experienced that myself. Yeah.
We ended up having a child, and 2 years later we had another one. Jeffrey was born in 1989, and then our marriage ended there. Like the day after he was born, I got out and started another life.
And it's kind of interesting, and you've touched on this before, so I think it's okay to mention, just Dale actually gave you some advice about that. Even
he did. He really didn't. He told me that when he found out we were talking about getting me, somehow this guy knows everything.
He really did.
We didn't tell anybody. He hadn't told nobody that I was aware of. She may have, but I didn't. And I didn't think she did, but he knew. He come by the gas station, get in the truck. I'm like, "Why, man? I'm working." He said, "Get in the truck." And I'm like, "Bub," I said, "I got to go. I'm going with Dad. I don't know what's the deal." But I jumped in and we were riding around. He said, "So what are we going to do?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Are you going to go through having this baby? Or what you going to do?" I said, "Yeah, we're going to get married." He said, "You don't need to marry her." I said, "What? She ain't one. She ain't going to be, you ain't going to last." And of course, he was right. 3 years later, we got the divorce.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of funny. You wonder sometimes if he was kind of looking at you like, he'd gone through some of the same things.
I mean, like, how did you know? And he never would tell me. He just said, "I know everything." And
there is something to that. There was something about him. I mean, he had a presence about him, absolutely. And I don't mean like a celebrity. I mean as a man. I've never been starstruck. I've never been one of those guys. Probably because I've been fortunate in my career. I've always been around celebrities, and I learned at an early age. But my dad told me, everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time. So I either liked somebody or didn't based on them. I had the most respect for people that I had respect for. And the people that, it didn't matter to me what they had done, really. Your dad always was one of those guys that when he'd walk in the garage, it was like that was the only guy you saw. And I wasn't the only one. I mean, right. He was just one of those people that just captivated people. And I've seen him, I mean, it's kind of funny. You mentioned earlier about him not showing up for an appearance. And anybody who works in what I do, you know, in marketing and business development, he kind of had a reputation for that. And it's kind of funny. You know, it wasn't, the thing is, it wasn't that he was irresponsible. It wasn't that he didn't appreciate his sponsors. I always said it was a good hunting spot or a fishing hole that won out over you more times than not. But what was funny was he could stand up a sponsor, show up at the garage, and they'd be just kind of not real happy with him. 5 minutes later, he's got his arm around her, and they're laughing and joking. He had that ability to just, and he did. He just seemed to have an instinct to know everything.
He did, and he was that person. If he, like I said, stood up a sponsor or whatever, they'd be mad that, like I said, 5 minutes later they're not.
You couldn't help it. I've seen wreck people on the track and then come down there ready to tear into them, and 5 minutes later they're laughing and joking around. You know, I didn't mean to wreck you. I was just shaking you up a little bit.
Tear the bonnet and rush your Wallace.
Yeah, it happened all the time. But the funny thing was it was never intended. I never, ever felt like it was malicious with him. You know, there's some guys that race kind of dirty. And I know people would even say that about him. I never felt like that. I've said this more than once. If you were between him and the finish line, you had a problem. Yep. You better either have a faster car or get out of his way.
Or out from Martin.
You get out from Martin. Yeah, that wasn't very often.
No,
I mean, he was one of the last guys. You know, and I've always said, you know, part of the reason was he knew every nut, bolt, and screw and rivet on that car. And that's something you don't see in too many guys.
You don't. Not these days, you don't.
And I really believe that makes you a different kind of driver.
It does. And, I mean, he was the one always working on his own cars and everything, too. And he, you know, he would jump right in there with the pit crew guys. And, you know, that's why what they called the junkyard dog back in the day, that crew respected him and appreciated him. They would do anything for that man. And,
yeah.
That speaks volumes.
And I think part of it too was knowledge. You know, it's one thing to be willing to jump in, but it's also another thing to be about probably more knowledgeable on the car than any chief on the roll.
Right.
You know, I mean, he knew those cars inside out and backwards. And it was, I always felt like that was from growing up with Ralph.
Yeah, it was.
Because they did everything.
And, you know, they did, and Dad had, you know, Papa, he wouldn't just give in to Dad. He, you know, Dad had to work on his own stuff and learn everything on his own, and you know, that's kind of the way Dad, you know, raised me and Dale Jr. We had to work on our own stuff, and, you know, I remember one time I had my car ready to go race, and my wife now, I went out on a date with her instead of going to the race shop. Work on the car, and I ended up missing two races. I had to sit out and go watch them.
Oh,
Dad
wow.
Found out that I didn't go to the shop because it was a Friday night, and he was out in some race somewhere, and he found out I didn't come to the shop Friday night just to wipe the car down or something. So he made me miss two races and had to go watch the races, too, on top of it.
Did he put somebody else in your car?
No, it just...
No, the car just sat out.
No, that would have been even worse if it didn't let somebody else.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, in a weird way, you know, I've always said with him, there was always a method to his madness. It may seem like it was unorthodox, but looking at it, you know, he was teaching you the priorities that, like, what you have today.
He was, and I told him, man, I said it was a date, and my car was ready and everything. So, this is afterwards. He said, well, you know, you could have just had her come to the shop with you and hang out. That'd have been a cool date for her. I'm like, well, I never thought about that. I think, you know, I took her out to dinner and took her to a movie. And
yeah, it'd
have been a lot more fun to be here at the race shop working on these race cars, wiping them down and showing her everything. I was like, okay.
Lesson learned.
Yep.
I bet you didn't miss one after that.
I did not. He was at the shop a lot with me.
So Jeffrey comes along. You just touched on it. You know, you meet Renee. You guys start dating. How long did you guys go out before you got married?
We dated for like 4 years.
Okay. I see. I won't ask you how long you've been married. I don't want to get you in trouble at home if you get the year wrong.
25 years.
Good man.
Yeah, we got married in 1999.
And she had a daughter, correct?
Yeah, she had a daughter, Blade. She was 3 years old when we met. And, you know, she grew up. I was her dad.
Sure.
But she, you know, she never got to see her dad or anything. He was never really come around or anything. And, you know, it was to the point where she even asked me to walk her down the aisle when she got married. So that, you know,
and put he never, me. So, he never did come around, huh?
No, they got talking a little bit there later in life, and like he did show up at her wedding, so he was there for that. Which I didn't know until after the wedding was over. So I would have tried to, you know, let him be part of the wedding because it is her dad, you know.
Yeah, there's something to that. And it is, life's hard. Life's hard. It's easy to criticize.
Yeah, like my life growing up, you know, I had all them things I could have been mad about or upset about. But, you know, that's just the trials and tribulations of life. You learn. That's how you learn.
Absolutely.
Experiences in life.
So I have to ask you, and you may have been asked this a million times, but it's something that is interesting to me. So, you know, being adopted myself, and like I say, I have very good parents. The only two people I've ever met in my life that even remotely resemble me are my kids. And that's something kind of unique, something I noticed probably from being adopted, and probably, I would guess, something you noticed. How surreal was it for you when you walk in and here's this man that looks a lot like you?
Yeah, I mean,
you can't deny the Earnhardt look.
I know. It was.
Did it affect you, or didn't even think about it?
No, I didn't really. I didn't even think about it.
It's something that's always been interesting to me. You see people that look like kids, and like even Jeffrey with you. I mean, he looks so much like you.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that, and I think my oldest boy Bobby, he resembles his mom's side of family more than me.
Sure.
So, I mean, I never really thought about that.
Okay. Yeah, didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was just curious because of the resemblance. Even with Dale and Kelly, and you know what I mean? Here's people that look just like you.
Later in life, after I grew up and everything, I do look at that now. I'm pretty amazed at how much me and Kelly resemble each other.
Yeah.
And then Dale Jr., I think, like I said, he's got his side of mama's side of family's looks, the G's.
He does, but you have to admit, without the glasses and beard, he looks Earnhardt.
He does.
There's something there, you know, like, not probably as much as you and Kelly, but yeah. There.
He's got both genes, Earnhardt and the G's.
He's a blend, yeah.
he has, I see a lot of his mama's side in him.
So that's kind of an interesting piece, too, and you've touched on this before. The Earnhardts were fairly close to your family, even growing up. Your mom was friends with what are your aunt and uncle?
Yes. So my Aunt Sherry, which is Uncle Danny's wife, her and my mom were real good friends. And that's actually how I got to talk to Dad.
So was your dad pretty close with them?
Yes. Yeah, Uncle Randy and Dad were real close. And so, after all the fights and everything with my mom, and because I talked to her more about it than my stepdad or Jack, but, we got it worked out, and she's like, I'll let you talk to him. We'll set up a phone call. And we actually ended up going up my Uncle Danny's and Aunt Sherry's house, and that's actually where I got to speak to him on the phone for a couple minutes.
First time.
Yeah,
after I found out who my dad was, and then I got to know more about him through people talking or just TV stuff, I got very curious of what kind of person he was. And so I was always daydream about, and, you know, sitting in school or whatever, and daydream about what it would be the day I get to meet him.
Sure, like anybody would. And yeah. I think to put it in perspective, and for people just joining us, this is Cary Earnhardt, son of Dale Earnhardt Sr. To put it in perspective, at this time, this is kind of like, you know, pre-internet. You know, it's not like you're going to do a Google search on Dale Sr. and figure everything out and see a million pictures.
Right, right.
You know, this is back when it was still, you know, more like, you know, you're talking to people and reading things.
Yeah, that was way before I knew much about internet stuff. So.
Sure. Yeah, it was, for any of us.
Even if it was around, because like I said, I was always the one who wanted to be outside running around playing boss, you know, playing ball with my friends or riding motorcycles or bicycles or fishing. So I was never around computer stuff except for when I was in school. And that was,
and this is when, so he would have probably been in the Wrangler car at this point, right?
Yeah, he was in the Wrangler car.
Yeah, so he was known, but he wasn't the household name probably that he became later, was he?
No, not that was early in
his career. I mean, this is when he's starting to make a name. People are noticing him, but he's not like, he's not the Dale Earnhardt. He's not the Intimidator yet.
He's not the Intimidator by the end. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's just, you know, I always, like I said, thought what it would be like and everything. And then I finally seen the newspaper that he was going to be at this, I think it was Winehouse Motors in Annapolis. And I seen he's going to be there for an appearance. And that's when I got talking to my mom about, you know, maybe going to, you know, meet him that day. And she, you know, we fought back and forth, and it was right beside Food Line. And so we had to go to grocery store, and I seen the car sitting there, the Wrangler car sitting on the trailer up there in front of the dealership. And I kept on, Mama, come on, let me go. And finally she agreed, and she sat across the street, leaning against the telephone pole while I sat over there waiting for him. And of all things to be in the newspaper the next day was my mom leaning against that telephone pole waiting for Dale Earnhardt to show up for her appearance, and he never showed up for her.
Dale's number one fan.
Yeah. And of course, you know, my stepdad didn't know we were going to be there and everything, so that, you know, created some more issues and conversations.
Oh, boy. Did he see it?
Yeah, he did. And he's always a paper in sports and stuff. So. So
and I'm sure it had to be something that weighed on you a little bit, because at the same time that you're curious, I'm sure you didn't want to do anything to hurt Jack. You know,
right,
Jack
right.
had been good to you, and I understand that completely. I was the same way. I mean, I really didn't even try and look up my biological parents until after my parents passed.
Mm-hmm.
I just they were always very open about it, much like I'm sure your mom was, but just didn't. I was always
felt funny about it. Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of people out there that have been adopted that has a lot of the same scenario growing up.
Yeah.
Like myself and you have, and this whenever I talk that story on the Dale Jr.'s podcast. And also, I did a thing with Stapleton 24. It's a YouTube channel.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
spent the day with him.
A lot of people, after them two shows, came up to me, and I've had several of them actually tear up talking about, you know, how much it touched them and helped them with their situation growing up, being adopted and everything, and not knowing their dad. It really meant a lot to me that helped people.
I can see that.
And I never thought about, you know, other people that was adopted or what they'd gone through until after I'd done that show and these people started coming up talking to me about it. And it made me realize, you know, like I always said, there's
we're all the same. We all have issues and stuff, and all have, you know, scenarios in life that we've had to, you know, challenge and struggle through. And but to hear, you know, come from them people themselves,
and realize that they have some of the same feelings that you had.
And I was, you know, thankful that I was able to, you know, help them with whatever they were going through at that time.
Yeah, and likewise, I think that is a big help, probably even more than you realize. It was, and even Dale Jr. is like, you know, from both sides. I'm sure there was siblings out there that didn't know they had a brother or sister that found out, much like Dale and Kelly did, and that helped hearing their side of it. I'm sure that that's something that's very real for a lot of people. You know, I can understand that. So as you've met him now, and it's kind of out, how did things go with, like, Jack and your mom and now Dale Sr.?
It was a struggle at first. You know, I could tell that they didn't like me doing, like, seeing him and stuff, but they didn't try to get in between me seeing him and visiting with him. And, you know, after that, I started talking to Jack about it and having conversations, just me and him, about, you know, what I wanted in life with Dad, you know, Jack, with Dale, to get to know him and be part of the family again. But I didn't want to upset him and then bother him, and I wanted him to, I wanted him to be okay with it and understand that it's something that
it's nothing against him.
Yeah, something that's important. He can help me with that, and so it worked out. We, you know, like I started, you know, being around Dad and everything. Like I said, me and Dale Jr. got the race car, and we started racing, and so I went from there to advancing up in my career, from, you know, street stock days at the late models to Goody's Dash. Actually, I went to Goody's Dash from street stocks and running Concord, and went to Goody's Dash running a 4-cylinder race car around Daytona Speedway. And that was a huge
Yeah, trip. For people that aren't aware, you know, we have a diverse group on this show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Tell them a little bit about what Goody's Dash is.
Well, Goody's Dash was a little 4-cylinder cars. It was a little Cavalier, Chevrolet Cavalier I drove. You know, it was the smaller cars. And Richard Mash out of Taylorsville, North Carolina, was the car owner, and a great car owner. I mean, he was accomplished a lot in that series. And so we would run around the big tracks like Daytona, or just like Cup cars and stuff. We'd kind of follow their circuit. And then we run a lot of short tracks also. So, you know, going from racing at a half-mile racetrack in a street stock car, which everybody may not know is like a regular car you drive on the road, is a 1981 Monte Carlo. And
not a lot different to it.
Yeah.
Some safety equipment.
Yeah, a lot. And, you know, speeds are a lot different too. So I went from running this racetrack where you're letting off in the corners to go through the corners and stuff, to running at Daytona where you're not supposed to let off in the corners. And I remember, you know, going out there to first practice and got done my first, you know, runs up the racetrack and coming in and sitting there working on the car, and Dad comes up and says, "Look, you're not going to get back in that car unless you hold it wide open." I said, "But you let out in the corner," he said, "just hold it wide open." I said, "Well, if I wreck it, you're paying for it. Just trust me." And so I went back out next practice, and he's on the radio with me talking to me, and I held it wide open, and he's like, "Look at there, you're second on the board right now." And I went from like 17th to second.
Just hold that. Was that nerve-wracking going into the corner first time wide open?
It was the first lap. I was like, "Oh, we're going to make it or not?" And
it's amazing how well the car sticks, and then you're like, "Huh?"
Yes, and you know, them cars, they're like I said, they have suspension adjustable suspension and shocks and everything, just like, you know, the Xfinity cars, Cup cars, and late model cars and stuff like that. Where my street stock didn't have. You couldn't do any adjustments. You had, everything had to be, you know, just like manufactured vehicle would.
How much did he talk to you like that? Like, how much did he say, do this or do that or put the car here?
A lot. He did. He helped me a lot.
Little things, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, so as I advanced up from Goody's Dash to late models, started running late models, and I went to running ARCA. Actually, I ran Busch Series first for the Chanlock car, Doug Taylor Motorsports. I ran that for a year, and I finally, like, went to Dad, and was like, man, I need to drive for you. If there's an opportunity to race under Dale Earnhardt Corporate, I'd like to do that. And he said, I've, you know, been having this on my mind and been waiting for you to come ask. So we ended up putting the ARCA deal together, and it's basically ARCA is the old Cup cars.
Sure.
So it was the same thing the Cup guys are driving. So we had a lot of cars and parts laying around there. And I can remember going, where's it? Pocono. And I'm sitting there racing, and I've got a pretty good lead on the field. Ryan Newman was the guy in second place. And, you know, he was back behind me a good ways. And I kept, you know, every lap I'd look up, see where he's at. And finally, Dad's like, don't stop looking in that mirror. You're going to lose this race. I'm like, I'm doing it on this race. Trust me. It's slowing you down. So, and Ryan, he was gaining on me. And so I stopped looking in the mirror, and so I started pulling back away again. And I won that race by half a track length over Ryan Newman.
And it's amazing, too, that he could tell just by your driving and the times what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, that man knows everything.
And he really did.
He knew everything. It's like, how did you see me looking in the mirror? There ain't no way. But he knew.
And he was one of those guys, too, that knew the car so well. I would be willing to bet he could almost tell by the time and the sound he's taking his eyes off the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like and then being a driver himself, he probably knew looking in the mirror.
Well, he knew because he's probably done it himself and learned it.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we had a lot of good times. And, you know, back to my mom and dad, Jack, and our relationship with, you know, Dale Earnhardt and my dad.
Starting that.
When I went to Daytona to run that Goody's Dash race, you know, I got my mom and Jack to go, and we're hanging out there, and Dad, Dale, and Jack's talking, and they're actually having a conversation, and I'm like, man, this is really cool. And so I heard the story for the race, the Goody's Dash race. My car was number 3, good wrench on it, black with silver on the bottom, just like Dad's. I remember after the race, the story was told, and I think Dale talked about this, that he took my mom and Jack up into the Goodyear tire at Daytona to watch the race. And they were sitting there, and somebody hollered, Dale, is that your son? He goes, yeah, it's our son, ain't it, Jack? And I think that's what opened the relationship for Jack and Dale, to get to know each other and be able to be around each other.
And it really is another example of what he was like as a man.
It is. And
you know, just kind of one of those guys, you couldn't help but like him.
Oh, no. And like when I started running late models, you know, Jack actually studied about race cars and learned a lot. And he was my crew chief for a while on my late model cars, working out of Dale Earnhardt Incorporated. He was always over there. In the evenings when he get off work, he'd come over and work and do things. And then occasionally Dale and Dad would come in and say, hey, Jack, let's go ride around the farm a minute. So they go ride around the farm and talk about who knows what. And you know, it meant a lot to me that they were able to have that relationship, and it helped.
It says a lot about both of them. You know, they obviously both cared about you a lot, and I'm sure your dad was grateful that Jack was there when he couldn't be.
I know he is. I mean, that's why he gave me up for adoption. He said, because he wasn't in a position in his life to be taking care of a kid and be there for it.
Early days were scary for him. I mean, I've known people that were close to him, you know, talked about it, and they're like, you know, you don't, people don't know what he went through to be able to keep racing.
Yeah, they don't. And you know, for him to give me up for adoption for Jack, because he knew Jack could take care of me
and be there for me.
And yet still stayed close. And I think it was obvious, like, you know, his brother and sister-in-law stayed with your aunt and uncle and your mima, and everybody stayed close. You know, you were still an Earnhardt.
Yeah, and you know, we weren't close when I was put up for adoption. And, you know, I never got to know my papa Ralph, and I've got one picture of him holding me as a baby.
How old were you when he passed? Young.
I don't think you can look it up,
but yeah, I don't remember what year it was.
I didn't look at all that.
So you don't remember him, obviously.
I have no recognition or memories or anything of Papa Ralph. Just stories and, like I said, that one picture.
Did Dale talk about him a lot?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so they were pretty. He was influential to him for sure.
Yeah, and Papa Ralph was, the way I understood, was kind of a hard fellow, and you know, kids had, like I said, they learned to do things their own, and you know, and that's just some ways that parents raise their kids so they can be able to manage in life and when they get out on their own.
Well, and I'm not making excuses for them, but to put it in perspective too, I think. So my dad was much older than his dad. You know, my dad was born in 21. His dad was born around 01. And kind of similar to Ralph, you know, Dale Sr. was born in 51. You know, Ralph would have been born, you know, right around the Depression stuff, World War One, World War Two, growing up in that. That's a different, those people had a different era.
Yes.
You know, it was a harder life.
Yes.
And I think people don't realize that there was a real sense of survival. You know, it was kind of like, you know, work, provide, keep food on the table, keep a roof over the head. And that puts a different pressure on a guy.
It does. And you hit it on the nail, head on the nail, nail on the head. There we go. You know, that's a different era where, like I said, it was a lot going on that men went through. You know, being in the military and fighting for our country and stuff like that, and it was survival mode back then.
Absolutely, and I think too, some of the, you know, more rural areas. Like I grew up in a rural area. I know, like my dad was in World War II, and at the time that he went off, my mom and would have been my oldest brother at that time had to go and live with my grandparents out on a farm because, you know, they obviously didn't make enough to get by on their own.
Right,
and I'm sure it was like that. For Ralph, you know, I mean, he went through that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a you know, you're starting with basically nothing,
right? And my, you know, my grandpa, he raced to provide a living for his family. It's like Dad, he grew up with that
in father, the background. But he even had the knowledge of that father that did know cars and was able to pass it on, and then he kind of took it to the next level.
Yes sir, he did. And yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm fortunate because, you know, we got to be together like we were, and I learned a whole lot from him too, you know, working on cars and stuff like that too, and racing,
and just life.
You know, like,
because he was, you know, people don't realize how sharp. And you touched on it, you know, that he gave your wife some advice that helps with business. I don't think people realize how sharp he was business-wise. He was one, if not the first, and if I'm not mistaken, he was the first, that licensed his own name in NASCAR.
He was.
And that was something that just, I mean, today it just seems like an automatic. That wasn't done then. Nobody had done that. And that is, you know, for people that don't know what that means, is every single T-shirt, keychain, hat, you name it, if it said DEI or Dale Earnhardt on it, he had a royalty off that.
Right, he did. And you know, Sports Image was the big apparel company back in the day. And, you know, that's the company that licensed and sold all the apparel, you know, keychains and everything. In NASCAR, and you know, I guess whoever had it was struggling with managing the company and all, and it was a great successful business, and you know, Dad ended up buying the company and built it up really, really good, and ended up turning around selling it. And you know, he saw that vision. He knew he could get this company at a decent price and then turn around and sell it and make a lot of profit off of it.
And he kind of recognized his own value as a brand.
Yes.
You know, he could see what he was becoming. And then he actually couldn't just see it. He actually made it. I mean, the Intimidator really became a character. I mean, I've always said this. There was Dale Earnhardt Sr., and then there was the Intimidator.
Right.
And they were three different people.
Three different, yep. That's for sure.
So you grew up, you know, now you're into racing. You're starting to see some success. Family's growing.
Yes, sir.
You know, at what point do you start getting into the outdoor stuff?
Right
after you retired more.
Well, yeah, during racing, you know, my family traveled with me. My wife homeschooled the kids, so they traveled with me. And then there towards the end, about the last five, six years of racing, you know, they didn't travel. The kids were in public school. And
they start getting busy. Yeah, it's hard.
Life got busy, and, you know, life got tired of traveling so much. And here I was on my own traveling by myself, and it just, you know, got...
And that's hard.
It kind of took away from my family.
And for people just joining us, this is Kerry Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s son. We're talking about his career and life. And, you know, you touch on something there that you're out racing. You know, your family's going with you. How many weeks a year would you be on the road?
It wasn't just for racing either. We had times we'd go out, do appearances, or, you know, go on to test somewhere. So it was quite a bit. I mean, we have
most of the year.
30-something races a year. No, it wasn't that many.
And you're probably there for 4 or 5 days of the week.
3 days of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd be home Monday. We'd get home Sunday night. I really wouldn't count Sunday night, because we'd get home Sunday night, and, you know, we'd end up leaving Wednesday to Thursday morning to go to racetracks. And then some of them days, you're home on the weekdays. You, like I said, you have appearances you got to go do, so you travel for that. And it just got to where I didn't really have family life. And, you know, I missed my boys growing up and playing ball and everything. And, you know, missed our daughter Blade playing volleyball in school and stuff like that. And, you know, we talked about having one of our own. And so when we talked about doing that, I was like, well, I'm just cut back on racing and be at home more. So I did that. I ran probably 10 to 12 races a year. And then the last year I ran 6 races, and I finally just, you know, said, this ain't for me. I want my family life. I'd rather have that. So I ended up retiring from racing NASCAR to going to work at Don Hart Incorporated. It's a family business. And then, you know, this is all after Dad passed. So I did that for several years until, you know, Teresa decided to close the doors and, you know, get out of racing. And so from there, I went on, and me and my wife had an opportunity with Schumacher Homes to join partnership with them to create some outdoor living style homes, which is, you know, your post beams, rock, open home design, you know, kitchen and living room all flowed together. And, you know, we've been fortunate with them, been with them for 11 years now, creating home designs. Just, we'd work with architects in the company and tell them what we want and what we like to see in a home. And they, you know, would sketch it out and draw it up, and, you know, we'd change a few things here and there, and then Schumacher Homes went out selling them.
And you've been involved in a lot of different things. So, I mean, that's under the Earnhardt Outdoors, correct?
Well, that's under Earnhardt Collection.
Collection.
It's Earnhardt Collection. And then we have Earnhardt Outdoors is where, you know, I started doing some TV shows with it was a show called Family Traditions. It was a young couple, had two kids, and, you know, they're about family and hunting in their show. And, it was looked like a great partnership and something that, something that's kind of along my line as far as family and, you know, outdoors. So, you know, we worked with them for 2 years, and, you know, things just didn't work there, and their show went downhill. They're no longer married now, so they got divorced, and it just, you know, show went away, and I just kind of stepped out of hunting shows and started doing some appearances in, you know, with the outdoor industry and doing some shows here and there with Rocky Mountain Elk Federation and some other companies in the outdoor industry.
Then you guys also have Rural Heart, which is Renee's clothing and apparel.
Right. And so after I got that company going and, you know, we started doing things with it, my wife, she's, you know, her family's big in art, and her dad was a big artist, and her, you know, our niece, and, you know, they're all, you know, like drawing and creative. So she wanted to design something for, I guess, the countryside for women. And so she's created Rural Heart, which Rural Retreat is where she grew up from. And then Heart, I don't know where Heart came from, but, you know, she created that company and started doing shirts and hats and little onesies for babies and all kind of things, bibs and everything. And here recently, Disney's actually signed on to carry her products this year. So she's...
Oh, congratulations.
She's growing it. It's been a long road, like anything is, but it's starting to take off now. So she's excited and happy about that. And we just enjoying life.
So what are you into today? What's next? Where do you go, you know, in business or in what you're doing today? What do you guys see your next venture?
That's yet to be seen. We haven't got anything in mind at this moment, but
still big with the homes. You want to continue that, obviously.
We're still doing the homes. We're actually looking at growing Earnhardt Outdoors a little to another level now, and working kind of like, We've got a website we just started up, Earnhardt Outdoors, and we're going to be doing some stuff like traveling, doing hiking, biking, fishing, hunting, anything
like,
outdoors.
Like camping. Planning things, okay.
Yeah, and then we'll give our thoughts and 2 cents worth. So if anybody's looking to go, say, kayaking, they can go on our website and look up places we've been and, you know, the reviews we give and everything to help guide them in a direction. You know, a lot
that's
of like
a great idea.
Like we started rafting, going, you know, going floating rivers, and you always worry about what company to go to and which ones are, you know, good companies.
Yeah, have a good experience.
We've had some good ones, we had some bad ones. So that's what we want to do, is start there so people could, you know, have a guidance for them.
No, that's a good idea, because a lot of people don't know where to start. They're interested in, you know, especially, you know, folks who live in the city, you know, they may not know where to, you know, even begin. And this gives them, it helps them put together a trip plan, where to stay, where's the best place to rent something, where to go for dinner.
Right. It does.
No, that's a great idea.
So we're talking about doing that, and just, you know, this, I guess the influencers is what they call them. You know, a lot of people out there now doing this stuff, but we're going to try to do a little different, have some stuff is
a little more experience or
more attractive for the companies that we're wanting to
sure partners
represent.
That's really great. And you're obviously still close with Dale Jr. and Kelly. Do you do anything with JR?
No, I don't.
Okay. Other than, like, now, do you guys, I know that there's the Dale Earnhardt Foundation. Is that still pretty active?
I don't think it is. I mean, it
kind of slowed down.
See stuff here and there. It ain't as busy as it was.
It was kind of Taylor's thing for a while there, wasn't it?
Well, before that, it was me. I was doing a lot.
Oh, you headed it up. Okay, when you were at DEI?
Sir?
Was that when you were still at DEI?
I was working at Bell Hunt Incorporated, and, you know, Taylor was young then, so she she wasn't wanting to be able to do stuff like I was. And, you know, me and my wife
set up a bunch of things. We had some good friends in Vegas, and we hosted several poker tournaments, and proceeds from the poker tournament went back to the foundation. So, was able to do stuff, because the Art Foundation is all about, helping kids and schools and stuff like that with education. And so we raised money for that, and then we hosted events where, Dad had these suites at the racetracks, and we would put on events at the racetracks where we sold the tickets for the, people to come in to the condo and hang out in the condo with us and watch the race. And, that money went to the foundation too. And it was a lot done, but I don't think a lot of people felt any appreciation for what they did.
Sure. And that happens.
Yeah, I know Dale Hart Chevrolet, Tommy Cross, huge supporter of Dale Hart Chevrolet and Dale Hart Incorporated. He would always put on a car show every year, and he would take that money that made from car shows and put it towards the Dale Hart Foundation. And, this year he's not doing it because it's a lot to do. He went from having 20 cars the first show to last show he had 330-something cars. They spent 6 months putting that together.
Oh, yeah, it becomes a full-time project. Yeah. I know a couple of the mutual friend of ours, Ray Everham, he's got the Americana show up there. The same thing, and that's a big undertaking.
It is. And Ray has a lot of appreciation and enjoys doing what he does with that too.
And he's kind of a natural, but he's also got he's at that point in his life where he can focus on things like that.
He is. And I ran into him here and there, him and Aaron both. And they're always great people.
They're terrific people. And it's interesting for people that don't know, or, non-race fans, we're with Carrie Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt's son, senior, talking about Ray Everham. Ray was Jeff Gordon's crew chief, which, from the stand side, the bleachers and the campers, there was a definite divide between the Dale fans and the Gordon fans. But it is interesting, both Jeff and Ray just had absolute respect and admiration for Dale.
Oh, they
did. I know Jeff gets choked up when he talks about him, that he looked up to him. And I'll tell you, and this story, but our listeners don't. Interesting thing that I just think is the coolest thing, and Ray is a cool guy, but this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. In his office, he has a race suit that he wore, and it has the patch peeled back, and underneath it has Dale Earnhardt. And it was the first race suit that Ray had. From what I understand, he couldn't afford one. And he said to your dad, do you have an old suit I could buy? And your dad said, what are you going to do with it? And he goes, I need a suit to race. So he gave him one that still had his name on it. And he had a patch made, put over your dad's name. And it's in a glass case in his office. You never seen it?
I have not. That's the first I've heard of this. That's a pretty interesting story.
So I could have the exact details wrong, but the fire suit exists. It's in a glass case, and it just has the patch peeled back so you can see that it's Ray Everham on the patch and Dale Earnhardt under the patch.
Oh, wow. Man, I'm about to go see that now.
And and I think that says a lot about your dad, but it also says a lot about this industry, that it really is almost like a big family. Everybody, going back, and I can remember seeing this, somebody's car would break and they'd go down to the garage and people would lend people parts to get, you do whatever you had to get one of your buddies back on the track that you're racing against.
Yep, you did. And Dad was that person. He actually helped, work on other people's cars too. And
no question.
Give them advice, and just, it's like I said, it's a big family. And, I know Dad and Jeff Gordon, they did some business partnerships together too. People don't realize, they thought they were enemies against each other, but they were actually business partners on some
things. No, yeah, the fans were a little more, spicy towards each other than they ever were.
Yes, they were.
And it's kind of funny.
That's what made racing what it was, though. You know, it's a fan.
There's no question. And you know what's interesting to me today, and it actually makes me feel really good because, like I've said, I've always had absolute respect for your dad, and not in the sense like most people do. Like, I couldn't even rattle off his stats, probably like a true Dale fan could, but I always love the fact that you go to a race today, you will still see a ton of number three shirts, and you know, they're still there.
You do. I just out in public too, I see like the old school three stuff. You know.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. To any of us, the real number three. There was only one number three. I wish they retired that number.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. When I say that, I'm talking about Dale's number. You know, it was just, you know, it's kind of funny to anybody close to him, the two and the three really belong to him.
Yeah, it did.
And it doesn't matter what your car you see it on, it's really his number.
His number, yeah. That's for sure.
But now he was a terrific guy, and I got to tell you, it's been absolutely amazing talking to you. I can't thank you enough for taking the time. You're a great guy and have a great family, and you know, I really appreciate hearing the stories. I'm sure our listeners do too. So, you know, if you get a chance, check out Earnhardt Outdoors, check out, you know, the Earnhardt Collection. Definitely check out you know, all the other things that you guys are involved in. Is there anything else you want to talk about? We got Rural Heart as well. We got to be sure to plug it.
Rural Heart. We got to help my wife out. So we got
absolutely.
Go check it all out. Follow us on Facebook. Terry Earnhardt, check me out on Facebook.
Facebook and Instagram, I'm sure both.
Yeah, all that stuff. Social media stuff I got to learn a lot more about.
Well, you do pretty well at it. So does your family. Your boys do well at it. Your wife does well at it.
Yeah, we try. And, you know, we just try to keep people in our lives. And, you know, I know, like I said, a lot of people follow us and everything, like to know what we're up to and what we're doing. So we try to keep that going so that everybody can see what we're doing.
Well, I'm sure everybody appreciates it. Everybody likes seeing you do well, and it's fun to catch up with you and hear about what you're up to. So thank you a lot for joining us. I can't thank you enough. This has been Hollywood and Horsepower. We appreciate you spending some time with us today. Be sure to check out our sponsors, and be sure to check out Terry Earnhardt. Follow him and his wife, Renee Earnhardt, online, Earnhardt Collection, Earnhardt Outdoors, and Rural Heart. Anything else you want to plug, Terry?
No, I appreciate you having me on, and it's been a neat conversation, I'd say that.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I always enjoy talking to you, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank you. This has been Hollywood and Horsepower. Be sure to check out the Palm, Miami, if you're ever in town there, and we appreciate everybody following us here on PBS Radio.